podcast with Rouse Hill Baptist Church. I have with me today Jit and Jan Yuan. Many of you know who Jit and Jan are, but quite a few of you don't as well. So let me just introduce them. Jit and Jan, of course, have been members at what was previously Northwest Community Baptist Church and now Rouse Hill Baptist Church, but they also spend the majority of their days out at Sankalaburi in Thailand, where they are missionaries. And you're currently working with
Global Interaction, which was formerly Australian Baptist Missionary Society.
Yes. And so we've been supporting them as a church, as many churches have been, for quite a number of years. And we've been very much blessed with their presence when they've come back on furlough. So tell me, Jit and Jan, who are the people groups you actually work with?
Well, we work in Western Thailand. We're only 15 kilometres from the border of what was known as Burma, now Myanmar. And so it's a really mixed community of people because people have come out, they've been refugees, they've been people that are local. So even though it's a Thai country, the majority of people are not Thai, but there are some really Thai people. Otherwise, the local population in the majority in the past was Pokaren, but a lot of Skorkaren have come into the area mainly from the Burma side. There are Mon people. They're related to the Cambodians linguistically and ethnically. There are Lao people who kind of migrated out of Laos originally. There are Burmese ethnically and
Indian,
some Indians, yes. So quite a mixed community.
And so we're talking about the United Nations of Southeast Asia here, aren't we?
Yes, yeah. Means a lot of languages too.
Wow. And you're originally from Tasmania, aren't you,
Yes, that's
Jan?
Correct.
And, Jit, where are you originally from?
I'm originally from Thailand, in that area as well. But my ethnically is my mix between Thai and Karen.
Fantastic. So you've actually gone home to be missionary.
Yeah, I still recognize my home over there.
Oh, that's fantastic. And so you don't normally spend a lot of time back here in Australia because having been to your place over at Sankalaburi, what a beautiful place it is.
Yes, it is.
A gorgeous part of the country and an amazing space. But you've been stuck here for a little while. How have you been coping with all of that?
Well, we came back last year in June, expecting to be back within 7 months. But we had to wait a little bit longer. Our support wasn't quite enough. And so just when we thought we were going to go, suddenly everything closed down because of the COVID-19. So we're stuck here. And a few people have come back from overseas because of that. Some people at risk and some who were just about to come anyway. But there are still folk working overseas. So we're here. We're still waiting for Australia to let us out and Thailand to let us in. Mm. And also just wait and see how things go. I'm kind of now in the risk group, so we need to be a bit more careful. So we've been here. Thankfully, we have a house to live in. So instead of renting it out and going, we're still living in it. And so we're been working from home.
So what do missionaries do when they're stuck back in Australia?
Do things like talk to churches about missions, like Rouse Hill Baptist Church.
Well, that's a good thing. So what are you planning to do when you get back? I mean, when you get back on the ground, back in Sankalaburi, what are your plans?
During the lockdown, I'm a little bit disappointed because we plan to go back and start all sort of thing back home. But during the time I able to do the thing I love to do, which normally I cannot do, time limit, that's all sort of YouTube I watch and plan to do. And because we plan to work more with the senior citizenship over there group, with the Karen, Thai, whatever, who get old. And I feel I will have ability to help them to increase their income kind of a bit and life value kind of thing when by talking and getting together, and now we've got so many ideas, but I love to go and start to do things like.
So you're itching to get back and get working with senior people?
More or less, yeah.
That's really Jit's kind of ministry, because he got inspired by seeing men sheds here in Australia.
That's mainly exciting.
Working with men, but some of the ladies like to come, so I try to work out how to do that. But my main work is with people with disabilities in the community now. I was a nurse working in the Kwai River Christian Hospital for many years, but I've been doing this work with people with disabilities for a number of years now. The team are still doing that work. We talk usually at least once a week. I'm still doing the finances. So I'm waiting for things to come from there, but we keep in touch, and they're out visiting as much as they can, but they're also restricted. In Thailand, everyone has to wear a mask, but they're also restricted in how much they can go out and visit. But they're able to do some of that. So they're keeping going, and we'll just continue the work when we get back. Can't do things like camps and getting people together, which is a big thing that Rouse Hill Baptist Church supports as our camp ministry to the disabled.
So how hard is it to live and survive as a disabled person in Thailand?
It's not easy. They certainly don't have the same facilities. We've been able to access things for them, things like wheelchairs and other things. We've been able to get take them for prostheses to be made, like artificial legs and other splints and shoes. And these things are available. It's just a matter of accessing them. And they're really only available for Thai citizens. But because we get to know people and chat and be friendly, they'll often give us extra benefits of some people who are not citizens get the benefits as well. So at home, people are almost entirely at home. Certainly in our area, we don't have any live-in facilities for people, and we're not intending to do that. Our encouragement is to have people living at home, and we train families in how to care for them, and then we'll visit and help when we can.
And so by caring for people who especially don't have Thai citizenship and who have disabilities, who are senior and who have all of these challenges before them, you're able to model the love of Jesus and bring the message of the gospel to them in a way that's practical and they understand.
Yes, I think for myself, I think the friendship to able to witness or genuinely share the burden, the sadness or something like that, opportunity or even pray for them. And we said we can't help you everything, government can't. What we can do is, as a genuine friend, we do as we can. That
you can walk with them and they can see Jesus in you. Well, look, thank you so much for the work that you do. And thank you for the inspiration you are to us. And I appreciate you coming in and sharing that with us this week. It's great being May, Mission Month. We've been able to snare your time and hear a little bit about what you do. So thank you very much, Jit and Jan.
Thank you.
We want to say thank you to Rouse Hill Baptist Church for the continuing support. We know that we are supported for our going, but also for the ministry with Lantern Light. And just recently got the last instalment and just said we can't do the camps, but we will when we can.
Oh, it's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Welcome, everybody, to Daniel chapter 5, and thank you again, Alan, for leading us in some thoughts about the chapter. It's interesting how it pans out in the book of Daniel, because Daniel chapter 4 happens fairly early in the Babylonian Empire when Nebuchadnezzar is still on the throne, in the story of when he has a dream and he's finally cast out as an animal, basically lives an animal for 7 years and then comes back and is a humbled person and praises God. And that happens reasonably early in Nebuchadnezzar's reign. But now we're thrust back about 70 years after Daniel and his friends have been exiled from Israel, from Judah. So Daniel now is quite an old man. And what will transpire at the end of this chapter is, in terms of world history, a very dramatic event.
Very dramatic indeed, Rick. Yes, you could say the writing was on the wall for the Babylonian Empire, literally. I volunteered to preach this sermon because I'd preached 2 weeks ago the Daniel chapter 4, and you can't separate these passages, yet they're separated by maybe 50 years of life. I just love the Bible for the amount that it doesn't say. I mean, we have this picture of Daniel, he's going from major event to major event to major event to major event. Sounds all very exciting, but when you distill maybe 4 or 5 great stories over 70 years, you see, he might have only been 13 or 14 when he was first exiled. He'd have gone through his bar mitzvah. He would have been considered adult, but a very young man. And so he went through all of those early days, and, of course, King Nebuchadnezzar was the guy. But we get to chapter 5, and we go straight from Nebuchadnezzar's great joy at God and proclamation of the Most High God, and there's no real indication between chapter 4 and 5 that, oh, hang on, 50 years has passed.
And we're about to see the end of an empire.
We are. And it's interesting that at the beginning of the Babylonian Empire, we have this such a positive beginning with Nebuchadnezzar and his acceptance of the Most High God. And we get the mirror image at the end of the Babylonian Empire with King Belshazzar. Now, don't mix him up with Belteshazzar, which was Daniel's Babylonian name. This is King Belshazzar. And King Belshazzar wasn't really king. In fact, there's been so much debate about who on earth was this guy over the years. There was no real references to who he was, and everybody knew from secular history that Nabonidus was the final king of Babylon. So there was many doubts about this passage within the book of Daniel. However, it has since come to light that Belshazzar was the grandson of Nebuchadnezzar. He was the son of Nabonidus. And what we do learn about King Nabonidus was that, I don't know, maybe he saw the writing on the wall earlier than everybody else too, because he exiled himself to Arabia and he ruled from Tamar in Arabia. So that says to me maybe Babylon wasn't what it used to be. He obviously chose a better place as king. And he left his son, King Belshazzar, as the vice-regent or viceroy of Babylon.
It's interesting how in archaeology and biblical history that sometimes some of the great quandaries and question marks about the accuracy of the Bible in history sometimes get resolved as further excavations and discoveries are made, sometimes.
Well, that's the classic story of Pilate. Nobody thought Pilate ever existed until they found a tablet with Pilate inscribed on it. And time again, biblical history has seemed to be accurate. We just don't seem to take enough notice of that. But here we go from King Nebuchadnezzar, a guy who I would say believed in and honoured the Most High God. His grandson, King Belshazzar, could be described as exactly the opposite. He was definitely a hedonist. He lived for the gods of stone and gold and brass and revelry and drunkenness. And this story suddenly pops up out of nowhere. And here's King Belshazzar giving a great banquet for 1,000 of his nobles And he was drinking wine with
him. We should note that in the Bible, there are some banquets that happen, and the results because of the banquets, they should not have had the banquet. and we can think of other banquets in the Bible where things turn seriously pear-shaped.
Yes. It wouldn't surprise me if Babylon was surrounded by the Medes and the Persians at this stage, and this might have been one of those last hurrah banquets. Yes. You just don't know for sure.
Yeah.
But what we do know is that Belshazzar was having a knees up with his 1,000 top nobles.
A bit too much wine, lack of judgment.
They were starting to get pretty cut, I think. And he gave orders in his great wisdom and arrogance to bring in the gold and silver goblets that Nebuchadnezzar, his grandfather, had taken from the temple in Jerusalem.
And we need to understand this was a deep profanity because they're using what were the holy instruments from the temple to use just for a wild party, maybe an orgy.
Yep. They were holy things, and it wasn't just that they'd been taken from the temple, but they praised the gods of gold and silver, of bronze, iron, wood and stone. In fact, I think they praised just about every god possible, but there was no recognition of the Most High God.
So this is a very deliberate act of defiance against the God of the Hebrews.
It comes across that way, and it may have been, but I almost would say it's an act of extreme ignorance. Mm-hmm. Yep. An act of extreme stupidity, and it shows how the sons of the father and the grandfather had rejected the mores of the father. Mm. They had gone – it wasn't unusual to see. I mean, you look at the son of Solomon.
Mm, that's right, right through.
Right through. I am going to make my mark on this kingdom and mold it in my image.
Yep. Which is the history of Judah and Israel, that so often you'd have what was a relatively good king, and yet the son or the grandson was nothing like that at all.
Many fools were born to great people. So here we've got Belshazzar.
So we can't just trust our parents for our responsibility. We have to take responsibility for ourselves.
Well, we do. We do. And sometimes that can be a big mistake too. So we have King Belshazzar, and here he is. He's having a wild party. And, of course, many of us would probably say they drank too much and started to see things. But there's too much evidence that the words that appeared on the wall were there for too long for it to just be a vision. Because suddenly the fingers of a human hand appeared, and there was King Belshazzar and 1,000 nobles and probably their spouses and all their hangers-on.
So this is a pretty big room.
It would be a big room or a courtyard or wherever it is, but we know that they all witnessed this. So suddenly the fingers of a human hand appeared and wrote on the plaster of the wall near the lampstand in the royal palace. The king watched the hand as it wrote. His face turned pale, and he was so frightened that his knees knocked together. And his legs gave way.
Some of us have had experiences like that in our life at various occasions when our knees have knocked as well.
Absolutely. And as you say, knees, please don't knock. The difference here, this whole story has to be read in the light of Nebuchadnezzar and his dream. Very important, because it's a mirror image. Now, what we have is somebody else witnessing and narrating this. They talk about King Belshazzar's fear. Whereas Nebuchadnezzar had the dream and he comes out and says to all of his people, I was afraid. And there was a lot of respect and integrity in that statement of self-awareness, whereas Belshazzar was too drunk to be self-aware, and somebody who is narrating has to say, that guy's packing death. That guy is so scared, his knees are knocking together. And he did what Nebuchadnezzar did. He called out for the enchanters, astrologers, and diviners to be brought.
Well, that's what they're being paid for.
Well, that's what that's amazing. Job. They weren't there already, really, yeah. Wasn't it? And they were probably half sconed themselves.
They might have been, yeah.
Anyway, he says, whoever reads this writing and tells me what it means will be clothed in purple and have a gold chain placed around his neck and will be made the third highest ruler in the kingdom. Yeah. You know what that statement tells me? He didn't value his kingdom very much. Mm-hmm. He was willing to give it away to somebody who could just do their job. That's a poor ruler. That's weak-mindedness. And, okay, he might have been a little bit under the influence. Thankfully, he wasn't driving his chariot. But it came down to he made poor decisions. He wasn't a smart, wise man. He wasn't a good leader. He wasn't a good ruler.
And what he doesn't know is the promise he's making to give them these places of authority and these gifts will only last one night anyway.
Yes, well, that was the problem. Short-term stuff.
Short-term stuff, but he doesn't know that.
King Nebuchadnezzar never made those offers, did he? He valued his kingdom. But all the king's wise men came in and they couldn't read the writing or tell the king what it meant. So King Belshazzar became even more terrified. His face grew pale. His nobles, who weren't that smart, they were just baffled. Mm. But the king was worried. Now, the queen, hearing the voices of the king, I'm reading from chapter 5, by the way, the queen, hearing the voices of the king and his nobles, came into the banquet hall. Obviously, maybe it wasn't women allowed in.
This must have been an all-male.
All-male Nisa.
Which makes you wonder what kind of party it was.
Yeah, Bucks Night, something like that. But, I mean, good on her first statement. O king, live forever. I wonder if she meant that. She said, don't be alarmed. Don't look so pale. Don't be such a wimp. There's a man in your kingdom who has the spirit of the holy gods in him. In the time of your grandfather, he was found to have insight and intelligence and wisdom like that of the gods. Actually, there's a lot in that statement. We see the fall of Daniel throughout those 50 years. As the kingdom had changed hands, the importance of Daniel, who was the chief magician, had gone to the point of obscurity. He was an old man, but he was no longer a mover and shaker in the kingdom. Not only was the Most High God not valued, but his spokesperson wasn't either. King Belshazzar hadn't even any memory of him. No knowledge of him, but the queen, well, she was obviously a smarter person there.
So the queen remembers.
The queen remembers, yes.
Mm. And whether she's the queen or the queen mother, we're not quite certain. The queen remembers, which is a reminder for us to listen to our partners or our families, because sometimes they will bring in wisdom into our lives that we will not see ourselves.
Yes, it's good to listen and it's good to remember.
Listen to your family, yep.
Remember what the Lord has done, not just in your own life, but those around you.
Mm, that's right.
Because you never know when you're going to need to call on that encouragement, yep. That strength, that yep. Wisdom.
Exactly right.
So she gives a good rap to Daniel. He was able to explain and understand riddles and solve difficult problems. Well, that's minimizing a bit. But she says, go and call Daniel and he'll tell you what the writing means. She had faith in at least Daniel
yeah. And
the power that he had. So Daniel was brought before the king.
And to remember that Daniel is not young here. He's an older man.
Absolutely. Hmm. And he doesn't come of his own accord here. He's brought before the king. And the lack of respect that I read here that Daniel has for Belshazzar is amazing. He first gets quizzed. Are you Daniel, one of the exiles my father the king brought from Judah? I have heard that the spirit of the gods is in you and you have insight, intelligence, and outstanding wisdom. He says, my own team can't help me. I've heard that you're able to give interpretations. If you can read this writing and tell me what it means, you will be clothed in purple and have a gold chain placed around your neck and you'll be made the third highest ruler in the kingdom. And what does Daniel answer? You can keep your gifts for yourself and you can give your rewards to someone else, But nevertheless, I will read the writing for the king and tell him what it means.
I wonder whether Daniel has an inclination that he knows that things are about to go pear-shaped very quickly and these offers can't be withheld anyway, held up because of what's about to happen that night.
Well, he may have, but I would prefer to see it as Daniel did not want to be tainted.
Yeah, absolutely.
By what the king represented and who he was.
Yep, agree with
and
that.
Just compare that to what happened a couple of weeks ago when Nebuchadnezzar says, Daniel, please tell me. Daniel was troubled. Oh, I wish this would happen to your enemies. I wish this would happen to your adversaries. There was genuine connection. But here it's a case of all you can do is offer me gifts and I don't want them. I don't want a part of who you are, but I will do what you ask.
It's almost as though Daniel is saying, King, what can you do to me? I'm past having to pander to kings.
I'm
just going to do what's right here. And if you don't want to accept that, that's your problem.
Yep. And he had that strength. And he'd never lost his courage and he never lost his integrity. But it is Daniel who ties this story to the story of the dream. And he then goes on to explain to King Belshazzar, God gave your father, Nebuchadnezzar, sovereignty and greatness and glory and splendor. And he goes on to say how he had absolute power and he could humble whoever he wanted to humble. But when his heart, verse 20, but when his heart became arrogant and hardened with pride, he was deposed from his royal throne and stripped of his glory. He was driven away from people and given the mind of an animal, until he acknowledged that the Most High God is sovereign.
So Daniel now is referring back to the story from Daniel chapter 4.
Yeah. Yes, of which this is the mirror. But then he says, but you, his son or grandson, O Belshazzar, have not humbled yourself, though you knew all of this. So the story was obviously pretty well known still. Nebuchadnezzar hadn't hidden it. Instead, you have set yourself up against the Lord of heaven. You had the goblets from his temple brought to you, and you and your nobles, your wives and your concubines drank wine from them. No, they're all back in again now. You praised the gods of silver and gold, of bronze, iron, wood and stone, which cannot see or hear or understand, but you did not honor the God who holds in his hand your life and all your ways.
So verse 22 is a really critical verse in this story. It's a key turning point, because what he says is he's talked about Nebuchadnezzar's experience, but then he says, but you, his son or his grandson, Belshazzar, have not humbled yourself.
Yeah. And it's a complete opposite, a contrast to Nebuchadnezzar.
Who did humble himself.
And Daniel's there saying, you had the example. You have done the opposite, and this is what's happening. And he then explains the words, mene, mene, tekel, parson. God has numbered the days of your reign and brought it to an end. You have been weighed on the scales and found wanting. Your kingdom is divided and given to the Medes and Persians. And what was Belshazzar's response? He forced Daniel to be clothed in purple, a gold chain placed round his neck, and proclaimed the third highest ruler in the kingdom. He just didn't get it. He didn't listen, didn't respect, didn't fall down in repentance, didn't do anything. And that very night, Belshazzar, king of the Babylonians, was slain, and Darius the Mede took over the kingdom at the age of 62.
It's fascinating, just some of the little quirky things we discover in the story of Daniel. Including some of the common words we use and statements in English. For instance, the story that we talk about someone when they have feet of clay comes out of the story of Nebuchadnezzar's dream of the statue.
Yep.
When we say to someone, the writing's on the wall.
Comes out of Daniel.
Comes out of Daniel here in this story.
Yep.
And it's a really significant two passages, Daniel chapter 4, Daniel chapter 5, about the whole issue of humility versus pride. Am I willing to humble myself, to listen to others, to to open myself to what God says rather than what I want.
I'd even bring it down to another level too, one that we can all relate to. God is the one who sets us up in our positions.
Hmm.
And the description of being the lowliest in leadership of humans, you know, it's not on who you are and how good you are and what you are. It's on God's choice. He's put you there.
Hmm. Yeah.
As much as we may rail against it, God's put Donald Trump in his position and he's put Jacinda Ardern in her position and Scott Morrison in their position. That's looking at big pictures. He's put them there. How they act according to God is the important thing.
It's a responsibility before
but
God.
We need to take it down another level. Any ministry that we're involved in, every day you and me, we are put in that position by God. If we've sorted out ourselves, we're nothing other than a conqueror. We're put in that position, and the question we have to ask ourselves is, will I run that ministry in arrogance and like a little dominion, or will I do it with the grace and humility of God? Because the grace and humility of God will create a beautiful Babylon and somebody who runs it in a poor and selfish way, in an arrogant way, will end up with the Medes and the Persians staring down their neck.
And extending that concept to all of our life.
Yes.
The question is, will I run my life out of pride and saying, look what I've achieved?
Yeah.
And it's great to have visions and dreams and go for things, because so many of the wonderful things in our world happen because people did that. They followed their vision, their dream. But at the end of the day, to accept that everything is a gift from God. And if I run my life, if I ever think to myself, gee, maybe pride is just taking hold here, really, really important reminder for us that the way that the Bible over and over again says the way to happiness, to true integrity and meaning in life, the fullness of life, to know God is always through the way of humbling myself.
Mm.
Doesn't mean I don't take authority when necessary, doesn't mean I hold to my convictions. Sometimes to be very brave, but the way of humility is the way to God.
Yep. But there's no problem with being satisfied with what you've done, but there is a great problem in owning the greatness of what you've done.
Yeah, yeah.
Give glory to God, not to yourself.
Yeah.
Don't seek other people's approval and pats on the back. I mean, Jesus had something to say about that, didn't he?
Yeah.
You know, don't seek the applause of others, but give praise to God.
So this is not just, though, a story about Belshazzar, because the ramifications of his pride has huge ripples that go on through history, because that very night, Cyrus is commander, and Cyrus is the Mede. He diverts the Euphrates River. The soldiers who now were not able to get into access to Babylon because of the river blocking their way could now crawl through the river gates. And it's a story of a number of times in history where people have gotten access when they've been able to drain a river or get through a tunnel. And that night becomes the end of the Babylonian Empire.
Yes. Not just the end of a kingdom.
No.
The end of an empire.
Yeah. So this king's pride has enormous ramifications. Mm. And so what we have is when Nebuchadnezzar had his dream of the kingdoms, that the second kingdom in that dream, which is the Medo-Persian Empire, happens that very night.
Yes, yes. It's interesting. Kingdoms fall when the people or the leader or both turn their back on God.
Mm.
It takes a while, but the downward trend starts when God is not honoured. And we need to take a great sense of care in that as Australians, as members of any country.
Mm.
We need to be careful that when we arrogantly move the Most High God out of the picture, then we're on the downward slope.
Yeah. To act justly, love mercy, and walk humbly with your God. Micah.
Yep. And of course, the next part of Daniel is Daniel's love of cats, really, isn't it?
So it's a very dramatic passage.
Very dramatic. And continues on.
And the story of one man's arrogance and pride, and sadly what God does with that. And for a reminder for us, as we journey through this life right now through coronavirus lockdown, but as we come out of that, as we relate to others, above all as we relate to God, to be willing to come out of a place of openness and honesty and humility to say, God, my life is a gift. What do you want of me under your grace and your blessing for me to be your servant to this world and to you?
Amen.
Thanks, Alan. And we're looking forward to the final chapter coming up of Daniel chapter 6.
Thanks.
For any information about the church and what's happening and how we're arranging things during this significant time of the virus shutdown, the best place to contact us would be at office@rhbc.com.au. If you have any special prayer points or things you'd like to let us know about, please let us know, and we'd love to respond in any way we possibly can. Also, in terms of offerings, if you'd like to give direct debit, if you'd like to contact us at the office on that email address, we'll provide the information of how to do direct debit offering. We'd just like to say that our prayers are with you and in every way during this significant time. And if there's any way we can help and reach out in care and love for the community and those around us, we'd love to do so in whatever way we can. So please contact us. God bless everybody. Bye-bye.